103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. We're at 3.2 Dublin City FM, The Sod Show with Brian and Peter, brought to you in association with greensax.ie, compostable bags for home and garden. This week, Peter's speaking with Andrew Wilson, garden designer. It's not often Peter speaks with somebody who has their own Wikipedia entry. Andrew Wilson, Wikipedia says, is a British landscape architect, garden designer, lecturer and writer. He is a partner in Wilson MacWilliam Studio and the founder of the London College of Garden Design. He has judged for the Royal Horticultural Society at the Chelsea Flower Show, Hampton Court and Tatton Park, and has also judged the Bloom Festival in Ireland. He wrote a regular column for Gardeners Illustrated and contributes to the Royal Horticultural's journal, The Garden, alongside the production of a series of books, the most recent of which are The Influential Gardeners and The Book of Garden Plans. The Sod Show's Peter Donegan speaks with Andrew Wilson.
For those who don't know you, your relationship to Bloom is...
For those who don't know me, well, at the moment I'm an assessor of the show gardens and a judge. But Gary Graham approached me 8 years ago, I think, to see if I could help with the setting up of Bloom as a show. I think there was a need in Ireland, or certainly a desire amongst people, horticulturists and nurseries and designers, to have a show that they felt proud of, that celebrated their work here in Ireland, and Bloom is the result.
Go back a little bit behind the scenes, and I say this to most people. I used to grow plants under my bed when I was 5. You woke up one day and said you wanted to be a Bloom judge. And I know, obviously, a little bit more about you than maybe others, but you've just come fresh out of Chelsea to start that answer to your question off. What were you doing in Chelsea?
Chelsea, it was the centenary of the show at the Chelsea Hospital this year, and kind of special for me as well, because I last exhibited a garden at Chelsea in 1995, which makes me a really old man. I know I sound really young, but since 1995 I've been involved in judging, assessing the gardens, not just at Chelsea but at Hampton Court Palace Flower Show for the RHS, and I also get heavily involved in the development of their judging processes as well. But it was really kind of an interesting show for me, because on the one hand I was exhibiting in the fresh garden section and then judging the main show gardens at the same time. So hopping in and out of sort of judgely duties and exhibitor duties. And I've been judging for 17 years at the various RHS shows, and in effect that experience is what I bring to Bloom, I think, to try to offer that sense of discernment in judging. That means you deliver a medal that is perhaps not necessarily what people wanted, but that they can understand how they've managed to get there.
Does it make you turn around, and it's almost like analysing Mark Polan and T-Rex sometimes, because you used to be classically trained. Does it make you dissect things and then kind of go, I don't like what I dissected anymore, I don't like what this has become in a garden sense? And you know, I remember explaining to, you know, friends of mine that my daughter sowed seeds incorrectly because she's 3, and that's fine and that's okay. But when you have qualifications in horticulture, you know, you want to almost rearrange them when she's not looking, if that makes sense to you. How has that judging bit transformed you? Has it made you a better gardener? Has it made you a better gardener that people don't like? Has it made you less appealing, but you're happier and more content as a horticulturalist, knowing that it's gold or silver gilt?
I think there are several things there, really. You know, first of all, I'm a garden designer. And I also, with my second career hat on, I run the London College of Garden Design. And I've been involved in garden design education for nearly 30 years. So that sense of discernment in, first of all, knowing objectively how my own work is doing is important. I think the teaching and the assessment of students helps in that sense of discernment. You know, has this student produced an A-grade piece of work or a C-grade piece of work? So in a way, it's a very short step into judging that says, what is this person trying to do? And have they done it in their show garden? And I think, first of all, I can remember Andy Sturgeon, designer in the UK, saying that I think, first of all, you have to respect the judges, the people who are judging you. And from feedback I've had, I think people do respect the view and the sort of medal, the delivery of that award, and how it's been achieved, and they respect it because of the feedback. So the process is one of assessment to try to find a medal, of judging to make sure that that medal is the right medal in a shared group of people. It's never just an individual thing. But then also the feedback, which has echoes of my own work as a teacher with students. You know, why is this an A-grade piece of work? Or why is this a gold medal? Why is this a bronze medal? You know, what are the differences? What has that person maybe missed? Or what has that person achieved? And that, you know, as well as highlighting maybe some issues that might have taken the medal down, it's also important to be able to say, but this was also a fantastic delivery of planting quality or finish in construction and so on. And I think if people see it as a fair deal, then I think the respect continues. And that would happen at Chelsea, or it would happen at Bloom. I tried to bring that same kind of objective view as much as possible to that judging process.
I've got Brian in my left here back in the studio saying you did Chelsea. What and how did that go for you? What medal did you get?
Well, with Chelsea, we produced a garden for Cloudy Bay Vineyard in South Island, New Zealand, in the Marlborough region. They were our clients, our sponsors, and I think there was a sort of upwelling of feeling within the showground that it was a gold medal garden. In fact, it got a silver gilt, which is a great medal to have.
Bastards.
Sorry?
I said bastards.
Okay, let's go down that route. You know, these bloody judges, I think. And, you know, I would be absolutely happy with that medal had the feedback on the medal been kind of worthwhile and justifiable. And I think it wasn't. And it's a difficult situation because you have a group of judges feeding back to somebody who's potentially been involved in their training, who kind of tells people how to feed back. Although my client is really thrilled with the medal and the achievement and the garden that they really enjoyed, and showgoers and television audiences also really appreciated the garden. You know, the kind of feedback that I got made it a sort of personal sort of hit that sort of said, okay, there's something not quite right here. The first line of my feedback was that my chairs were in the wrong place on my garden. And in fact, you could put them anywhere. You could lift them up and move them around. And so it slightly didn't work for me. And so, you know, at them, I'll get over it. It's just one of those things that you just think, well, I kind of know how to deliver that information. And it wasn't really delivered, I think.
But I know I said, you know, a bad word, and I've slapped my head myself on the hand, and we're okay to say words like that, aren't we, Brian? But you know, in the nicest way of saying, there is no garden designer in the country who, if he did not love what he did for a living, and what he was creating or had created, you know, I would never be satisfied. If there was a medal higher than gold, I wouldn't be satisfied if I got that as well. And you wouldn't be normal if you weren't. So for you to be unhappy, I would assume, is the norm. Because, as I said with Gary on last week's show, I know what it's like to receive medal. I know it's like not to receive medal. I understood before I even didn't receive medal in year two. I understood why I received silver in year one. There's no argument with that. There's no argument with the judges at all, without question. And I expected both of them to be that, because I knew the rules. At the same token, part of me, one little mini me, wanted to jump out and, you know, kick him in the ghoulies and go, and go, yeah, because there is a bit, as you said, within show garden design that is it fair to say, open to interpretation?
Well, I think with virtually anything, there's a certain amount of subjectivity. I think, you know, a lot of the feedback on show garden design is about design. You've got to have a sense of theatre, and there's got to be a sort of suspension of disbelief, a bit like going to the theatre. So you've got to believe what this person's doing in this garden. And I think also feel their passion for it. So it's not this kind of cold-hearted, you know, this is rubbish and this is savaged and this is an issue. You know, it's really not like that. It's actually a very sort of balanced assessment that I try to achieve the majority as objective. You know, how can we measure this? How is this not working? And often I will remind other judges that I've got to feedback on their decision making to somebody in a meaningful way. But there are parts of it also that are debatable, shall we say, and maybe more subjective. But everybody knows that coming into show garden land. They kind of know the rules. They know who they're up against. They know who their judges are. At least I hope they do. That, you know, they actually accept that decisions may not go the way that they want them to. And I think any designer who comes in assuming that they are going to get a gold or assuming they are going to get best in show is going to potentially have quite a hefty fall. That I think you can't always predict how the judging might work. And you certainly can't always predict how best in show might work. So best in category, really. The way in which the judging works is quite rational and ordered. There's a kind of measure to it, and I can use that information to feedback to people. But I think, you know, sometimes you walk onto a garden and you just think, wow, this is absolutely amazing. And that feeling often is sort of lodges with you. And when it comes to the best in show, it's a kind of heart decision. It's a feeling that, you know, I want to be in this space or I want to take this space home. It's much more sort of personal feeling. Maybe it should be more measured, but in some ways it's the judges letting their head down a little at that point and saying, which did I really enjoy or appreciate as a personal decision? And I kind of like that balance, really.
Speaking of balance, Brian, give me something a little bit upbeat. We mentioned Mark Bolan and T-Rex just at the start of the show. Might be a little bit of a right time for that. In the meantime, I'll talk to you in part two in just a little while.
I don't know, Peter. Last week, Gary Graham from Bloom said Leroy D, and you translated it to the B word, and another B word this week. Where is the Sod Show going with the language? And these landscape gardeners and gardeners take it so seriously. We have to mellow with some T-Rex and hot love. She's my woman of gold, she's not very old. Uh-huh. She's my woman of gold, she's not very old. Uh-huh. I don't mean to be bold, but to me I hold your hand. She ain't a witch, and I love the way she twitch, uh-huh. I ain't no witch, and I love the way she twitch, uh-huh. I'm a labor of love in my Persian gloves, uh-huh. Well, she's faster than most, and she lives on the coast, uh-huh. Well, she's faster than most, and she lives on the coast, uh-huh. I'm a two-penny prince, and I give her hot love, uh-huh. Take it out. We'll be right back.
Part two of the Sod Show when we were coming to you from the Phoenix Park in my company, Andrew Wilson. Andrew, it was about a year after you judged one of my gardens in 2007. I didn't realise, I guess, how famous you were, if that makes sense, but I did realise I had one of your books on my shelf 12 months delayed. How many books have you to your arsenal?
I'm currently on book number 11 and I'm actually behind with it. So I'm hoping that Timber Press, my publisher, is not listening to this because I should actually be working on it. But I think partly because of my educational role, people, publishers come to you because they feel maybe you've got something to say or that there's an authoritative voice. I'm not sure about the fame, really. I kind of like the idea of fame. I think famous in my own lunchtime probably is about right. And it's an odd world because, in the garden design world and in the world of horticulture, then I'm well known. But I step out on the street and it's not like some kind of celebrity walking down the road. Nobody knows who the hell I am, really. And I kind of like that. I think I'm not a sort of prima donna, but... I think people maybe think I've got something to say. My designs are award-winning often, and I have a design practice back in London called the Wilson McWilliam Studio. I work with a guy called Gavin McWilliam, who I actually met because he was a former student. And running the London College of Garden Design, I kind of continued with this educational format. So lots of people know you because of that. The books also come, and in a way they all help each other. It's a bit of a juggling act a lot of the time. But I think overall, lots of garden designers have essentially the same problem. And in a way, it's the reason for shows like Bloom or any of the RHS shows back in the UK, that you could actually be an incredibly successful and talented garden designer, but nobody gets to see your work. If you're designing behind the garden wall, behind closed doors, your client sees it, but nobody else does. So a lot of your time as a garden designer is actually spent promoting yourself. Some people take that the wrong way. But you have to, you have to get a web presence. You have to potentially promote through interviews like this, through local newspapers, national newspapers, production of books. If I write an article in the RHS Journal, then 300,000 people know who Andrew Wilson is. If I design a small garden in London, maybe the family that owns it sees that garden. And so there's a big difference there. And keeping your name out in front of people is not just a kind of narcissistic tendency. It's a business need. So, for instance, I tweet and I like to tweet. And I see it as a sort of business promotional thing. My daughter's got me interested in Facebook, and interestingly, Facebook seems to be getting a bit more business orientated, but I always saw that as a social thing. But again, you can show pieces that you've produced. I shared images on both Twitter and on Facebook of the Chelsea garden. Chelsea, 160,000 people come to Chelsea. Not all of them might have walked past my garden. So I kind of need to remind people of what we did. It's gone now. It's all been broken down. So the images and that sort of visual element of what you do as a designer has to be proclaimed and used somehow. So sometimes it might be that 40% of my time is actually in productive garden design. The other 60% is potentially in promotional work of one form or another, whether that's lectures or book writing or whatever. And I think lots of people might be surprised at that, really.
Are there things in horticulture that get in your nerves? Like really get in your nerves? That
Well, I think one of the things that gets on my nerves is that I introduce myself as a garden designer and people call you all sorts of other things. You know, generally nice things, but, you know, I get landscape gardener or landscape contractor. I think there needs to be a kind of clarity as to what you do. And although many people might see garden design as a sort of specialist activity, there are lots of different things that you can do as a garden designer. But I think also people kind of treat you a little bit like a GP, that they expect you to know everything that's wrong with their plants very often. And so, you know, instantly you'll get people talking about their black spot on their roses and green fly and why their apples haven't produced in abundance or, you know, whatever, you know, some of which I can talk about. But 20% of your time as a garden designer typically on a job is planting. So I think people have to kind of say, what is the other 80%? And 80% is kind of winning your work in the first place from your client, sort of promoting yourself, talking to them, winning their confidence, meeting their brief. I think you've also got a lot of information in site assessment and understanding what this place is that you're working with, what it needs, how your design is going to fit in. And then you've also got lots of things like construction and the use of materials, lighting and the technology that goes into gardens, and kind of quite mundane things that are really important, like soil drainage. They're expensive sometimes, they're hidden. Clients don't necessarily see or understand why gardens cost money. Obviously, if a lot of that work, like drainage underground, is lost or hidden, they also forget why they might have to pay for it, or, you know, how it's fitted into the scheme. So I think in lots of ways, it's this kind of sense of being misunderstood. Probably your audience will each have varying ideas as to what a garden designer does. And not all of it is accurate and on the mark, really.
Do you like cutting grass, or does it get in your nerves?
Well, I am a really bad hay fever sufferer, which is kind of amusing. You know, I think of all the things that you could go into when you've got really bad hay fever. I've had it since childhood, and it doesn't show any signs of going away. And grass is actually one of my main problems. On the other hand, there's no escaping grass. It's everywhere. So, you know, I kind of love the sort of garden nature of it, and I have to just put up with the fact that I react badly to it, kind of. But, you know, I think most gardeners will identify with the sort of issue of maintenance. And I love the kind of moving around of plants. You know, I wake up and I think that doesn't look quite right. It's a kind of compositional thing, and it's changing the way a space works or the way your place works. And that's the kick as a designer, really. But I think also there are really mundane things, like mowing the lawn is not my favourite occupation. And the previous owners in my house put in a privet hedge. I hate this bloody hedge. And I hate it because I know I'm going to go back to home and it'll have grown and look like a bad wig. And I'll have to sort of maintain it. There is a kind of pride in it, because when it's been clipped, it does look fab. So I do still take a pride in it, even though I think it's not long for this world. There's a kind of reflective part in that maintenance as well, that, you know, it's that sense that you're distracting your main thought processes. You're able to think about other things while you're doing something quite mundane. And I think for a lot of people, that's why sort of gardens and gardening is quite relaxing. It kind of takes you out of your current issues and gives you something else to think about, which I think is a good form of relaxation, really. And it's also kind of never ending.
Do you find sometimes when you consider yourself or you think about yourself, do you consider yourself to be slightly odd? I don't mean that in a bad sense. But do you look at yourself in the mirror sometimes and go, you really have a nutty little bit of a little man inside that skull of yours? How does it work? Do you do that thing that I sometimes do, which is wake up at 4 a.m. and go, I shouldn't have put that there. I should have put it on the far side of the garden. Does that happen to you? Is that normal? Is it what the better gardeners do? Or is it a case of that there's a seesaw balancing scale between normal and what some may call abnormal with horticulturists who, as versus garden designers, who wake up in the middle of the night and say, I'm uneasy about this?
I think with my design training, you know, a lot of the process of design is that it's worked out on paper or on the computer these days, and that you have a sense, here's my idea, here's how it's going to work. I refine how that's going to work. And I do think that people don't really understand the amount of work that goes into design. You know, the sort of attention to detail, in a way, the planning. So I think added to that, garden design can be quite a solitary occupation. A lot of people work alone. Sometimes that in itself is quite daunting because you do things and then you kind of need to talk to somebody or need to express an opinion about it. So you find yourself talking to yourself an awful lot, or I talk to the dog or the cat, who, you know, not in the slightest bit interested in a way, but it's a way of kind of voicing an idea. And so I do still wake up at sort of 2 o'clock in the morning. I think in a way the analogy to the GP earlier was a kind of good one, because I think once you're a designer, you are always a designer. So whether you're having a shower at 7 a.m. or whether you're coming home from the pub at 11 p.m, or, you know, that suddenly that feeling, that idea comes back to you and you can't get it out of your head.
And there we leave part one of an interview with Andrew Wilson with Peter Donegan. We'll return to it next week on The Sod Show. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you thought of Bloom. Did you go? What did you see? What was your favourite piece? At Sod Show on Twitter, www.sodshow.com on the web. And as always, all shows are available for download from the very beginning, way, way back when, on sodshow.com. With thanks to our sponsors, as always, greensacks.ie, compostable bags for home and garden, greensacks.ie. See you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Prima donna girl, yeah. All I ever wanted was the world. I can't help that I need it all. The prima donna life, the rise and fall. You say that I'm kind of difficult, but it's always someone else's fault. Got you wrapped around my finger, babe. You can count on me. Question right now, baby. Beauty queen on a silver screen. Living life like I'm in a dream. I know I've got a big ego. I really don't know why it's such a big deal, though. The world. I can't help that I need